Putting the Scat in Eschatology. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
There are stars in the southern sky, southward as you go.
Let's not add any harmonies this week.
No, at all.
Let's just listen to the good harmonies.
There is moonlight and moon.
So hard not to sing along. I want to sing along. Oh, anyway. How long, was it 2 weeks ago we lost Glenn Frey?
Two or three, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm playing this because even though there's nine things in the anagram, it's the only song I could think of that had a number in it.
Really? This is why you play this song?
Yeah, Seven Bridges Road, nine anagrams.
Gail Scott, she's a senior faculty member of the Enneagram Institute. For thousands of years, spiritual teachers from many different traditions have reminded us of the richness of the human spirit and its potentials. But without real self-knowledge, it's not possible to awaken to the deeper truths of the soul or to sustain whatever degree of realization we have attained. That sounds like fancy words, but what that means is until we dig deep, we won't learn stuff, and until we hunker down in the stuff we've already learned, we won't be able to change. Hey, I should write this.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the most powerful tools for understanding ourselves and others is the Enneagram, an ancient symbol of unity and diversity, change and transformation. Last week, we discussed personality type 8, the challenger, the powerful, dominating type, self-confident, decisive, willful, and confrontational. But we also discovered that there are various ranges within each personality type. For example, Donald Trump and Mother Teresa. If I remember this right, Gail, did I get this right? They're both type 9s. Is that right, Gail?
Both type
8s,
right?
Type
8s. Right.
Oh, that's what I said. Sorry, type 8s. I said that. I'm looking ahead of my notes here. Type 8s, yeah. So that blew us all away, but what that helped us realize was we can't be judgmental. We can't say, ooh, you're a type 8. You're like Donald Trump. Oh, I'm not going to like you. Because do you like Mother Teresa? Well, then, yeah, chill.
That's right. Within each type, there's just a vast spectrum of personality. Obviously, we have to account for how many, you know, billions of people there are on the planet. And that's why it's just so fascinating to realize when you get right down to the root of it, or the really the hardwiring of the human ego, that there are only nine types. It's hard to believe, but it's true.
All right. Well, today we're going to chat about two types, type 9 and type 1. Let's start with type 9, the peacemaker, the easygoing, self-effacing type, a receptive, reassuring, agreeable, and complacent. As you imagine people listening, I'm sure every one of us knows of someone we would call a peacemaker. So help us pull apart type 9 in a better detail, please, Gail.
So, yes, the peacemaker. Basically, what the peacemaker wants, what the type 9 person wants, is to maintain an inner peaceful environment, sort of a quiet, calm, easygoing, peaceful state of mind and environment. So often starting from very young children, they're the mediators or the peacemakers in the family. They try to keep everyone from fighting. You know, they're the can't we all get along types. And as they grow up, they develop certain skills. So for instance, they often make really good listeners, really good therapists. They're the sort of person when you're in their presence, you feel relaxed and at ease and not judged. They have a very sort of easygoing, optimistic, supportive vibe about them. You know, they can be really warm. And they're naturally empathetic and generally non-judgmental, except when they're, you know, when they're in stress. But they're good listeners. They take time to be with you. And they have this incredible ability that they're able to see and relate to other people's points of view. They can see the truth. They can see the validity simultaneously in all various perspectives, which is why they literally make really good mediators on the world stage and good counselors. They don't come across as big personalities like eights. They're actually a withdrawn type. The eights an aggressive, assertive type. Nines, not so much. You know, they don't like to stick out. They don't like to put themselves out in an aggressive, attention-getting way.
Okay, I know two peacemakers. One I would totally put as a peacemaker, and the other one I kind of went, wow, really, the peacemaker? And that other one is Tim.
Yes.
So Tim the Tool, across the board from us here, scored reasonably high in three different categories.
Yes, I did.
One of them is this one, peacemaker.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that enables you to work on this show and for me to make fun of you. Because if you were a Donald Trump more type, a type 8 or that kind of a thing, you know, would we work well together, Tim, then? Do you think?
I know I would bow down to you because you are the bigger 8.
He's just called me a bigger 8? Okay, but did that surprise you? Or would you see yourself as a peacemaker, Tim?
Definitely the part about seeing other people's perspectives. I've always been very good at that, about seeing the bigger truth. And, you know, I love studying world religions, even though I'm still, you know, I still believe in Jesus. I kind of get the other ones. I definitely see that kind of stuff. At work, I'm definitely the one that's trying to... you know, find both sides of the story. So this staff member and this staff member, these two kids, you know, arguing with each other. And I definitely can see that. And I mean, that's been the interesting thing for me, because I took this Enneagram test last month when we'd spoken to you just afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I actually did it two or three times before I sent it in, before I clicked go. And I found that, you know, as I went over, some would change and some would stay the same. And the thing that struck me is I scored a 26 on 4, a 23 on 9, and a 22 on 2, and I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm. Well,
personality disorder.
Yeah, I know. One thing that we know about 9s is that because they can see all points of view, because they're so empathetic, they often identify with the other types, especially other significant people in their lives. So often when if I give someone the Enneagram test and say that person is a 9 and their partner, significant other, is a 6, the 9 will score very high on the 6 because they so identify with the people who are important to them in their life. So it can be difficult for 9s to find themselves on the Enneagram because they just relate to all of the types. That's part of their gift, is that they can see all sides of things, and they sort of bring that into themselves. You're talking about studying all world religions. Joseph Campbell was a 9, and he was the person that brought all the world's religions and traditions and mythologies together and showed the similarities in all of the wisdom traditions. He was very interested in that. And a lot of 9s are very interested in sort of synthesizing lots of different ideas.
Hmm. Okay, I don't know how to ask this. First of all, Gail, when you put down... on the Enneagram website, the Enneagram Institute website, on each personality type, there are famous examples.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that people get hung up in those famous examples, like I'm about to, each and every week you're on my show? I tend to get blown away by all these famous examples.
Yes, and you know, when you only know a little bit about the system, it's dangerous to attach it to certain people and try to, you know, extrapolate from this person and your opinions about them. And to, you know, create them, you know, as that type. So, yes, that can be very dangerous. But once you really know a lot about the system and you understand what the similarities are at root between all of these different people. So, for instance, it's interesting let's see, in the monarchy, you probably go that Queen Elizabeth II is a type 9.
Yeah, but hold on. Homer and Marge Simpson are type 9s?
So, Homer, yes. Oh, so you're going to go right to that, right?
Well, the reason I'm going there is because we have Homer in the studio with us. Homer, how do you feel about being a type 9, Homer?
Well, I like 9 because it's a bigger number than 8.
Exactly. Okay, good. So Homer, again, is sort of, you know, the funny, you know, version of the 9, and it brings to the fore some of the stereotypes about 9, which is that they can be sort of, you know, goofy and sort of nondescript and not really focused. And
Joey, what was that last one?
Sorry,
he's just being an idiot. Sorry, go ahead.
So, you know, they're lovable and likable but not particularly, you know, focused and kind of doofus. Another similar character that you might remember is the Jeff Bridges character, the dude from the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, or the character Woody Harrelson played on Cheers.
Yeah.
Yes, and those are both real life type 9s, Bridges and Harrelson. So it's that kind of easygoing, a little bit goofy sometimes, you know. Again, not a big assertive, aggressive personality. Sometimes they can seem nondescript or indistinct, but really they prefer to give other people the limelight. And part of the problem, or not the problem, but part of the issue with getting nines to develop is that they see themselves as less important and less consequential. So they tend to fade into the background. So it's really easy for them, for nines, to get swept up in other people's agendas and projects and forget themselves. So the big issue for nine is the self-forgetting. And the reason they do that is because they really want to maintain their inner peace. So they don't like confrontations. They're often, except when they're stressed, you know, very uncomfortable asserting themselves. And they don't like to express negative feelings or opinions. They're one of the positive outlook types. So they focus on the positive. They really value their connections with family and friends. And they like to be in what's really familiar and comfortable. They're usually real comfort seekers. You know, they're the people that, you know, just can't wait to get home at night and, you know, kick back and put on their slippers and get in the easy chair and, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the backside of nine? You know, everybody's gift has a backside. We all can understand the beautiful giftedness of a peacemaker. We get it. But what's the backside of the peacemaker?
So the backside of the peacemaker is that they forget themselves, that they don't necessarily show up fully and alive in their own life, and they can attach to other people, become very identified with other people or other agendas, and just go along to get along. So because they want to maintain peace, right, they don't want to cause arguments, they don't want to incite, you know, any kind of anger in anyone, that really threatens their inner peace. So they sometimes don't speak up, they don't express their opinions, they don't express their preferences, and they can become, you know, they can be pushed around, they can be taken advantage of. But really the issue is about getting the nines to show up in their own life. And what that usually means is that they have to deal with something that they really don't want to deal with, which is a lot of anger. And often the anger goes all the way back to childhood. Nines have a tendency to idealize their childhood and to think that it was all this, you know, sort of golden age and mom and dad were great, everything was wonderful. Not necessarily true, but if I think that and if I live in my ideal life, and often nines retreat to what we call an inner sanctum, which is kind of a, you know, just an ideal, beautiful place, a little garden where it's all nice and everybody's happy.
Tim, do you have a garden?
No, I have a black thumb. I don't have a green thumb.
I kill
just about everything.
This is a mental place to retreat to, especially if things become, you know, angry or agitated or problematic in my life. Nines can dissociate from what's actually going on, and they'll retreat into their minds where there's nice music playing and there's nice, you know, scenes from an ideal life, and it's a way of dissociating from the unpleasantness of life in order to maintain that inner peace. So in the service of that, they can miss a lot of their actual life, right, because they're dissociating from what's unpleasant and what they don't want to see. So they become also very defended. They have pretty heavy boundaries against the outside unpleasantness and anger. And in relationships, what drives people the craziest about nines is that they can be sitting right there, but they're dissociated and they're not paying attention to you. And they can say, like, oh, you know, whatever you want, honey. But, you know, deep inside, they're really fuming and angry, but they're not showing that. So if that goes along, then the nine gets even more angry because I'm being ignored.
Mm. So that's, the nine is the passive aggressive.
That's right. The nine is the most passive aggressive type.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Is that you?
Yes, ask my wife. She'll tell you.
Okay. Well, see, that's a defense mechanism. It always comes back to the basic desire. So for the nine, it comes back to the need to maintain peace. Unfortunately, these are egoic structures, so this is a false peace. This isn't authentic peace. This is a, you know, an egoic peace that we're trying to maintain by not paying attention, by sticking our fingers in our ears and going, la, 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 la. That's what nines do, right, because they don't want to hear the bad news.
So just before we move on to our next personality type, staying with type nine just for a second, as a nine recognizes their own ability to slip into unhealthy nine, they can awaken a part of themselves and become more engaged and own who they really are eventually? Or will nines always easily slip into passive, lose my identity, I'm not engaged?
We all easily slip into sort of the average fixations of our type, but with awareness and, you know, focus, when, once we realize that what our ego is up to, as a nine, once we realize that, you know, in my quest for inner peace, I'm not asserting myself, and it's because nines sort of confuse healthy self-assertion with something they dread, which is aggression, and they don't see themselves as aggressive, so they're sort of freaked out by the idea of upsetting other people. So the first thing, as I said, that nines want to do is get in touch with their anger. But in terms of behavioral changes, one of the red flags for a nine is saying yes when I really mean no. Yes, fine, honey, whatever you want. Oh, I don't care, whatever you want to do. And they just go along to get along.
Yeah.
So you can really change, you know, we say build, you know, new neural pathways in the brain by actually taking stock of what you want, what your preferences are, what your desires are, what your opinions are, and speak them out and stand up for yourself.
Yeah. You see, this is why I like this, because the whole phrase that got me hooked on the Enneagram Institute is ego agenda. When this stuff reveals your ego's agenda, and when you start to realize that, A, you have an ego, B, it has an agenda of its own, and once you start seeing the games that your ego plays, you can get out ahead of it and not allow your ego to pull you down into unhealthy personality type of, you know, the unhealthy spectrum of your personality type. Did I say that okay, Gail? Was that okay there?
Yes, very good.
Okay. That's a neat affirmation. What one is that? Okay, let's move on to type one, just type one. Now, type one, first of all, how do you summarize a type one? What, I mean, type ones, they are known as the reformer. So the rational, idealistic type, principled, purposeful, self-controlled, and perfectionistic. Ooh, perfectionistic.
So that's always down at the lower levels when we're more stressed or under more pressure.
Right.
But in general, healthy type ones, the healthy expression of it, are extraordinarily principled and purposeful people. They're valiant truth bearers. You know, they're naturally honest and just. And they are standing up for what's right in my neighborhood, in my school, in my country, in the world, whatever their area of interest has to be. They really want things to improve and change. They often become social activists or educators. They're drawn often to the pulpit and or educating. They're trying to, in a way, save souls and show people the right way to live, the right way to do things, the right way to, live a godly life. Ones tend to see themselves as, you know, good people, even as good little boys and girls. They're always working hard. They're trying to do what's right. They're trying to be correct and just and moral and upright.
Huh.
And so a way that we can, that they do make fun of this particular type, the way, as you were talking about The Simpsons, is the Saturday Night Live Dana Carvey character, the church lady. Remember her?
So that would that be sort of an unhealthy one?
Yes, exactly. That's a kind of a very fixated, you know, her name was Enid Strict, you know, and she's this uptight, smug, and pious host of the talk show Church Chat, right? And so it's a spoof of that holier-than-thou, you know, Christian churchgoer type one personality, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, at the other end, on the healthy end, you know, this is also Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and, you know, people who are really putting everything into trying to make the world a better place. So they want things done the right way, whatever that is, according to their standards and ideals. And, of course, they can be anywhere on the social or political spectrum. It doesn't mean that you think one way or another, but whatever way the type one, whatever the type one believes, you know, he or she believes in it wholeheartedly and is ready to go to the trenches, you know, on behalf of their beliefs and their ideals.
Okay, so again, let's just pull apart the healthy type 1 and the unhealthy type 1. So how would if someone's sitting there listening and they're going, "Oh, maybe I'm a type 1. Okay? Maybe I'm a reformer. I'm rational, idealistic, principled, purposeful, self-controlled and professionistic in some ways." What would be the first thing that the ego agenda would need to be made aware of?
That you always think you're right.
Oh.
and here's the reason why. It's that type 1 people have a very strong superego and a very strong inner voice that's always talking to them. And they have an incredible ability to orient toward true north, right? Like the inner workings, inner ego workings of the nine are always telling them what to do and what not to do, what's good, what's bad, black and white, what's right, what's wrong. And they are completely subsumed and hypnotized by this inner voice. And very often, it feels like the voice of God. It really feels like the voice of, an ultimate authority is speaking through me. Hmm. So we see a lot of this, in churches and religious settings. But there's a real conviction that it's not about me. I'm a messenger. I'm the voice, or I'm a conduit. But I do feel that this voice that I hear inside me is right and true and good, and is leading me in the right direction. And, if you would just listen to me, you'd be a lot better off.
Okay, so I'm thinking Joan of Arc?
Exactly, yes, yes. Exactly Joan of Arc. She heard, the voice wasn't of God, it was one of the archangels, wasn't it? Who was the voice that...
Steve. She heard. Steve the archangel.
Archangel Steve came to her and said, yes, this is what you have to do.
Right.
And so I think a lot of type 1s were burned at the stake, literally and metaphorically, because they do go to the trenches for what they believe.
It dawns on me. I just want to, recap a couple of things for our listeners. First of all, you're listening to the Drew Marshall Show. We're on the phone with Gail Scott. She's a senior faculty member of the Enneagram Institute. And this is a personality, am I saying this right? Test? Can I say that? There's another way to say that. It's a better way of saying this, isn't it?
Well, it's a personality system, and there's a test that you can take.
Right, okay. And the great thing about this is it's not, I want to clear this up. It's not some kind of, predictive star sign astrology. I'm not into that. I don't get that. That's why if it was anything like that, this would not be on our show as a regular feature. I like this because, as I just said a while ago, it reveals each person's personality type a little bit, but it also shatters this ego agenda, or attempts to shatter this ego agenda that we all have. And that's one thing I'm very aware of. I mean, if anybody should know that they have an ego, it's me, okay? Just want to get that out there.
Here's the thing. The ego agenda is the water that we're swimming in, and we have absolutely, zero perspective on it, right? It's just, it's how... The Enneagram, the types are actually how we are, it's the software that we're given. It's how we're programmed, so we don't know anything differently. It's interesting that, most people think we have just, the bird's eye view of everything in the world, and everyone is just a little bit, crazy and different from us. But what we find out from the Enneagram is that, no, you only see one-ninth of the pie. That's the water you're swimming in. Mm. So once you see how the other eight-ninths of the world are thinking and feeling and interpreting the world, and you see it really is very different world views, then you start to get a little perspective and realize, I'm not really front and center here. I just have a very small, slice of the pie, and that's all
right.
I'm seeing.
I just want to bring you into this because a little birdie told me that you might understand type 1 a little bit.
Yes, I am a type 1. I am definitely a reformer and a crusader and a moralist. And sometimes a perfectionist. So I've been working with this for a long time. So I really understand how this works, how this manifests in my life, and I've done a lot of work on it. But yes, even as a little kid, I grew up Catholic, and boy, I was going to be the best little Catholic girl the world had ever seen. And everything that I did was type 1 kids tend to be sort of earnest and serious. you know, and it's like we're here for something. We have a purpose. We have a mission. Actually, the missionary mentality of all faiths is a very one-ish kind of transmission. It's like, I know the truth, and it's up to me to spread it to the world. It's up to me to enlighten people. It's up to me to save souls. When I was a little kid, I used to sneak out of the house to take my little brother to church because my family wasn't going to church anymore.
Wow. That's not why I snuck out of the house.
No, I know. But I needed to save his, you know, little soul, and yeah, it wasn't going to happen, and he was in jeopardy. So it can manifest in a lot of different ways, not necessarily in the spiritual field, but we do see a lot of very famous, you know, spiritual characters of the type 1 persuasion.
Man, this stuff is, you know, here we are. We're devoting an entire half-hour segment to this for the, you know, 25 minutes. And we're trying to cover two personality types each time you're on a show so we can get through all of this by the time July comes around. And it's just not enough time. It's
no
unbelievable.
Way.
So
I've been telling you that.
I know. But the idea is just to give little people a little taste to get people interested so that they go to the Enneagram Institute website, enneagraminstitute.com, Enneagram, that's E-N-N-E-A, Ennea, which is nine, means nine.
The Greek word for nine, Enneagram, diagram.
Institute.com, and, you know, there's a free little test that you can do there, but I would highly recommend you do the real test, which is, what was it, 12 or 15
yeah,
bucks or something like that?
Yeah, it's like 12-something.
It's totally, totally worth it. It's not a ripoff. It's a great little thing. You're going to be forced into answering either-or questions, which drives some of us nuts. But you'll get the material, the feedback, and it's there for you to. There's so much material that you can study and work through yourself, and it's really important, I think, to work through this with your partner as well. Because once your partner sees some of the reasons you do what you do or react the way you react, boy, that takes a lot of pressure off of your reactions, and they don't take things as personally anymore because they realize you're just a number one and you're perfectionist. No, just kidding.
Yeah, and it's just how you're hardwired, and it actually has to do with brain chemistry as well, which is fascinating.
Gail, I cannot wait till we get back to you next month where we talk about type 2 and type 3. Go to the website Enneagram Institute, find out if you're type 2 or 3, and then tune in next week because we'll talk about you next week. Your ears will be burning. Gail Scott, Senior Faculty of the Enneagram Institute. A pleasure again, Gail. Thank you.
Thanks, Drew. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, a short break on our show, and when we come back, so much more. Stay with us.